Welcome to the Wisconsin Music Podcast.
Ladies and gentlemen, music enthusiasts of Wisconsin, welcome to another exciting episode of the Wisconsin Music Podcast. I am your host, Zach Fell, and today we're delving into the mesmerizing sounds of a group that truly embodies the essence of our local music scene. Conceived amidst the summer breeze of 2012 by Janesville's very own singer-songwriter Robbie Haas, Elmer and the Ceramic Trees have crafted a musical journey that weaves through the lush melodies of iconic bands such as The Beatles and Big Star, the melancholic pop of The Cure and Echo and the Bunnymen, the rhythmic pulse of New Order, and the grand choruses reminiscent of classic Bowie. And guess what, folks? The moment we've all been waiting for has arrived. Elmer and the Ceramic Trees have gifted us with their fifth musical masterpiece titled We Were Beautiful in August, a 10-track album that gracefully wraps summer nostalgia in dream pop-inspired autumnal melancholy, delivering an auditory experience that is both harrowing and utterly gorgeous. For those eager to immerse themselves in the sonic universe, you can already find the album available for your listening pleasure. Head over to elmerandtheceramictrees.bandcamp.com to experience the magic. Connect with Elmer and the Ceramic Trees on social media through Facebook and YouTube, and let's celebrate the incredible talent that Wisconsin has to offer. Let's get right into it. So, here with Robert from the Ceramic Trees, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So, let's get the audience to know you. How did you get into music, and how did you land into this group?
Sure. So, well, my musical journey, I guess, is kind of weird in that just my taste changed a lot. I would say when I really started to want to play an instrument was back when I was in high school. I was actually really into Kiss back then, which I'm not so much anymore.
Okay.
Nothing against them. It's just not really my thing anymore. But yeah, that was really what made me want to get into music, I guess. And then when I was a sophomore in high school, I got a bass guitar for my birthday. Sophomore. And I just kind of learned that by playing along to Ramon's songs.
Okay.
And then just from there, I learned to play guitar and started writing my own stuff. And it was really just for me at the beginning. I've always been kind of a shy and reserved person. So it's kind of took me years really to be able to perform in front of people. And then for Elmer and the Ceramic Trees, it's actually just me. The name's kind of deceiving, but I just kind of started that as I'd been playing music for a while and I sort of wanted to, you know, just sort of establish an identity. And there were bands like Echo and the Bunnymen and Susie and the Banshees that kind of had similar names.
Okay.
That I kind of wanted to model myself after. And so that was sort of where that came from. And yeah, and that's just from there. I've been just writing and recording ever since then.
Okay. So playing guitar, is there any other instruments that you play?
I play guitar and bass. And then some of the keyboards on the album, I play myself. Other stuff I program through my computer. And then the drums I program with MIDI on my computer. I wish I was talented enough to play it all on my own, but not quite, unfortunately.
Well, each instrument has its own discipline, that's for sure. I mean,
yeah.
Even programming drums, I mean, that's not an easy thing to do for, you know, for some people. So, I mean, that's a talent in and of itself.
Oh, thank you.
So, from what I was reading, this came around in 2012, so we're basically almost a 12-year anniversary here. So, what have how has this group evolved in these last 12 years?
Well, I would say, so like the first album, the self-titled one, that was kind of just, when I don't go back and listen to myself a whole lot, but when I do, it just feels very disjointed for that album, because it was sort of just, you know, like with your first album, I think probably a lot of people are like this, I don't know, like it's just sort of everything that you've written up to that point that you feel like is worth documenting.
Yep.
And so like, I mean, there's one song on there that I wrote back when I was in high school and other just stuff from all different periods of my life. And so it was kind of a challenge, like figuring out how to work it all together, because I'd gone through different phases in terms of what I was into musically, different phases in terms of what I felt comfortable with writing as a lyricist. So in some ways that doesn't even feel like an actual Elmer and the Ceramic Trees album, even though I guess it is. But I feel like the second album, Saturday Night Satellite, was when I kind of sort of started to pick up on really what I wanted to do musically. Like a lot of The Cure kind of started to shine through at that point, and just bands like The National, maybe a little bit of Bowie on that album. And then I feel like that kind of set the tone with what I've done since then. The third album, Maps of Outer Space, was maybe a little bit of a detour. I think a lot of that was written around like different drum patterns that I programmed. That was the starting point for probably most of the songs on that album. And I really haven't written quite like that since. Not because I haven't wanted to necessarily, but just because I've tried it again and it just hasn't worked.
Okay.
But yeah, for the last two albums, Isolation, Masquerade, and We Were Beautiful in August, I would say kind of stem from what was established on Saturday Night Satellite. And I feel like each one's kind of improved on the formula a little bit, to the point where like for the next album, I kind of want to go in a different branch because I don't know that, you know, eventually you follow a formula so much that it sort of feels like you can't really do anything more with it. And so that's kind of where I feel like I'm at this point. But so I guess it's kind of a long rambling answer, but that's how I feel like I've evolved.
I mean, people out there that are interested in your music definitely want to, you know, kind of dive in and know what's behind the scenes and what's the meaning behind, you know, these albums and how they've grown. Now, a lot of artists usually have a tough time with their sophomore album, but it sounds like that your sophomore album basically kind of launched into what you basically have evolved into, as evolved beyond that, where the first album was kind of like everything you had written before that, and then it was like a turn of tides, and then you're going forward with that second album going forward.
That would be how I would agree with that.
Okay, cool. Then I'm understanding exactly how your approach to this is. Then was your third album more like a sophomore album to you? Like it was a hard one to do, or was there an album after that album that was felt more like this album just doesn't seem like it's going anywhere, you had a lot of trouble with?
Yeah, so yeah, the third one, I mean, I ended up being fairly happy with how it turned out, but I did kind of have to really just change up my whole writing style with how to really get something decent. Like I kind of mentioned, that was the one where I really was writing based around drum patterns a lot that I'd programmed. A lot of, you know, just, I guess, kind of weird sounding drum patterns. I mean, I guess not really weird if you're into like Pornography era Cure or Joy Division, but it wasn't a way that I'd written before, and it just kind of felt like picking up my guitar was leading to dead ends at that point. So I really just started writing around those different drum patterns and stuff that I was playing on keyboards, usually pretty simple stuff. You know, like I'd come up with like a bass line on the keyboard and then layer something on top of that, and sometimes it worked. I feel like when it worked pretty well. But I do have like just a lot of songs from that era that just went absolutely nowhere.
Okay.
So yeah, that was the one that I would say was probably the most challenging. I mean, they're all kind of challenging at first, I think. I feel like I tend to kind of have this idea of what I want something to be at the start of a project, and then, you know, like when you have a concept of something, sometimes it's hard to realize that it's not working anymore and you need to just get past it and let it go and move in a different direction. And I feel like that's something I always have to go through at the beginning of a project.
Excellent. Excellent. Good. So being doing this for the last 12 years, have you played out live with any of this stuff since?
Yeah.
Okay. So is it all pre-programmed stuff and then you're playing along with it, or have you hired other musicians to play with you? How is the live scene going for you with this?
Sure. So with my live show, usually what I do is I have like the drums and the bass and keyboards all programmed and play along to the tracks. I always bump up the tempos a little bit just because I feel like a lot of times what sounds good recorded can sound kind of, or at least when I'm playing it, feel kind of sluggish live. So, and then I just sing and play guitar along to that. I had been playing out pretty, I mean, I have to balance stuff, you know, with work and family and everything. Before COVID, I had been playing out live pretty regularly, I feel like, at least by my standards. Mm-hmm. After COVID, never quite got in the same rhythm. I still play live, especially at open mics, has kind of been how I've been sort of easing myself back into it. But I also have a 2-year-old now, and so I just have to balance that with, you know, my wife and daughter, with work and with music, having time to write and record and play live. And so at the time I do have to work on music, I tend to, at this point, I don't know if it's smart or not, but I tend to prioritize the writing and the recording aspect of it. I probably would get more exposure and mileage out of prioritizing the live performances, but writing and recording, I guess, is really where my passion lies with it. So I tend to emphasize that, I guess.
Okay. So going with the branching off the recording part, have you ever gone into like a professional studio or a, you know, a side business studio, or have you done all this basically in-house at your own place?
I've done it all in-house. I do have a degree in audio engineering from Madison Media Institute. And okay. I did do a little bit of live sound engineering at a dinner theater, actually, and some other side gigs like that in a past life. So that's, I do have some background in it. I mean, I don't have a fancy setup or anything, but I just do the best that I can, I suppose. Right.
No, I mean, with today's technology, I mean, one of my side businesses is also an audio engineer, and I don't even use my near fields anymore. I just use the Slate VSX mixing headphones now. And it just, for me, I live in an apartment and I can't really use my near fields in the apartments. So, and I can't, you know, put things on the wall and I can't set up anything like that. But with the headphone things, it's just like technology where you can almost go anywhere now, and with a microphone and all the instruments are basically built in. It's just crazy what has happened in the last 25 years.
Yeah. Yeah.
So going to the live thing, I usually ask artists like, what's your perspective on the live scene? So you said you haven't really done a lot of it post-COVID, but pre-COVID, what did you feel the live scene was for the type of music that you are into?
Honestly, kind of difficult. I would say in Janesville, like, it's a smaller city, so a lot of places, I would say, you know, and I get it, understandably, like, prefer cover bands just because that's what draws people in. And then I think too, for my music, there's times where, like, I feel like I'm kind of in a bit of a no man's land, I guess, just because I'm not really, and I hope this doesn't sound like I'm trying to diminish anything anyone else does or say I'm more clever than other artists, because it's not like that at all, but I'm not really like a folk musician. So like with coffee shops, like, it can work. Like I do play open mics at coffee shops and things like that, but I feel like my music doesn't necessarily, it's too rock for a lot of what people are looking for in that setting, I guess. And then when it comes to like a lot of bars, I feel like maybe I'm too, what's the word I would, I don't know if mellow is the right word, but I'm not like, you know, just a fun guitar act either, you know, like a fun guitar rock act either. So I think, you know, there's maybe limited appeal there. So I kind of feel like in no man's land sometimes in that regard. The place that I had a lot of success and where I feel like I had the most people really tune into me was, we had an exclusive company record shop here in Janesville up until, oh gosh, was last year, I think, when it closed. And yeah, so I would do like, you know, release shows and record store day there. And I had quite a bit of success there. And because I feel like that was kind of my target audience, maybe, like, just like a lot of people, you know, a music nerd and a record store nerd. So I think maybe other people who, there were other people there who I feel like got my references more than, you know, at some of the other venues.
Right.
But I did have, once in a while, I'd play in Milwaukee. There's a place called Sherman Perk, which is still open, that I'd like to go back to. And I had a couple good shows there. And then the farmers markets around Janesville, I had some success with as well. But I do just, you know, kind of feel like sometimes I don't, my style doesn't really fit in anywhere. Maybe I should just pick a lane and I'd have better luck that way. But
producers and beat makers of Milwaukee, it is time for the 2024 Big Beat MKE Beat Battle Tournament, taking place at the Jackalope Lounge at the Wicked Hop in Milwaukee's Third Ward on Thursday nights between April 25th and June 13th. Producers are going to go head-to-head in 3 1-minute rounds to determine who is going to move on to the next round of the tournament with some amazing prizes from some great sponsors. Don't forget that you can submit your beats today at breakingandentering.net through March 31st.
Talking about your recent release, which is, I think, mm-hmm. We Were Beautiful in August, right?
Yeah. Yep.
Okay. Is there a meaning behind the title?
So it comes from one of the lyrics in the second song on there. I guess as far as meaning goes, I think, so I kind of wanted to do sort of like a summer nostalgia album that also, you know, sort of like when you look at some of those pictures, like, or stories of, and postcards of, you know, like just that sort of 50s nostalgia vibe.
Mm-hmm.
And there's something very comfortable about it and comforting about it. And so I'd written most of these tracks during the pandemic. And so like I was sort of reflecting on that. But then there's also sort of needs to be maybe sort of the recognizing that that time wasn't great for everyone, really. So I feel like, I mean, like the, you know, the sort of 50s, 60s nostalgia, like it's very warm and comforting, but it wasn't great for everyone, you know, especially if you're a minority during those times. Not that things are great now, but, you know, in some ways things have progressed, hopefully. But so I just kind of wanted to do like a summer nostalgia thing that maybe had sort of darker tinges to it. And I think that that line kind of ended up summing up sort of what I was aiming for.
Okay.
With the album. That's one of those things that where I don't know that people just listening to it would necessarily pick up on it. I think it's maybe reflected in the cover a little bit. I try to make it sort of look like an old postcard. And then when I finally get the hard copies all printed and everything, it'll be more apparent with that. But
gotcha.
But yeah, I guess I would sort of the meaning of the title, if that makes any sense.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
what would be like another track off of that newest album that you'd like the listeners to hear?
There's a song on there called The Blue June that is, I'm bad at kind of evaluating what songs of mine are good. I feel like my wife tends to have better instincts as far as what's going to connect with people. But that's one on there that I myself quite like. It's with the album, I feel like it was another one of those where it kind of felt challenging at times to sort of make it sound cohesive. So what I ended up doing was like the first half of the album, I think, is maybe the darker half, I don't know if gritty is the right word, but maybe more reality-based half, whereas in the second half, it kind of goes off in a more dreamy, escapist direction. And so with Blue June, that was kind of like the midpoint of the album. And so like the first maybe minute or so is kind of has its foot in that first half, the more reality-based, where it starts with just an acoustic guitar and my vocals, and my vocals are very dry on it, which I generally don't like to do. I don't always love my voice, so I usually put a lot of effects on it and everything. And then the second part of that song, then I did there's just a lot of reverb, a lot of layered synthesizers, a lot of layered guitar. Like if anyone's familiar with the band Beach House, they were kind of my inspiration for that, the second half of that song. And then I was also, if people are familiar with Chad and Jeremy, they're like this 60s duo, British duo, Britpop, not Britpop, but British Invasion duo that was kind of like folky, folk pop, folk rock from that era. And I have an album of theirs that's like a greatest hits album. And I think when they were remastering it or mastering it for CD for the first time, they must have just been like very focused on making everything as loud as they could get it, because it's just totally brick walled. And it doesn't technically sound good, but there's something about it that sort of appeals to me for whatever reason.
Okay.
And so that was kind of from a production standpoint, an inspiration to that song as well in the latter part of it.
Seaside, seasick, scuff-pumped lovers. They carve their names out under the covers. Secret seconds now elope with eternity by storm. A poet bird with a flip of her shoulder as the hours illuminate all the faults in their embrace. In the blues I'm gonna fight you bad on Monday. When the screen door slams and all the animals go running, where are you?
Sweet times love is sweet.
awesome. Now, you had mentioned that you have a degree in audio engineering. So do you use that like with other people? Like, do you do other people's music, or is it just basically just your own stuff?
Just mine. I had at one point hoped to do that, but I just got to a point where it's like, well, I kind of need to pay the bills and
yeah.
and that sort of thing. So I did have to, I went back to school, got a unrelated degree and started an unrelated career. And maybe someday I'd like to do that in the maybe production for other artists kind of on the side. But it's not in the cards right now, unfortunately.
Yeah, I hear you. I've been there for sure. And I think a lot of people have similar situations where they want to do something, but it's just not in the cards quite yet.
Yeah.
A little bit earlier, you had talked about work-life balance, having a two-year-old, and you're married, and obviously you just got done talking about an unrelated music job. How well is your work balance working out for you? Is it still a struggle, or are you finding you've gotten a pretty good control over it?
It kind of goes through different phases where I feel like I've got a good grip on it. Other times I don't. I manage, I guess. I guess the main thing is right now with my music, like I just feel like I don't have, I think it's going to get better over time. I really do. But with the balance now, like I just feel like I've got, you know, okay, I've got this amount of hours I can really reliably commit to for music per week. And, you know, what makes me happiest as far as how I'm spending that time. And I guess what makes me happiest doesn't always line up with what would be best as far as getting more exposure. Like I tend to focus on the writing and the recording aspect above all else when it comes to my music right now. And I think I would probably be better served by spending more time on promotional activities, more time, you know, looking for gigs and that sort of thing. But, yeah. But I guess the flip side of that is, you know, once you get to the feeling like, okay, I'm probably not going to earn a living off of this, then maybe it is best just to focus on what makes me happiest rather than what's gonna, you know, maybe make me a couple more bucks someday.
Right, yeah.
Than what I'm doing. So it is a challenge though, and I do always have kind of that inner conflict over whether I'm doing what I should be or not.
Right. Yeah, enjoy your kids while they're still kids, because before you know it, they're going to be 20. I just, my kid just turned 22 in June, and it's just like, I can't believe 20 years have gone by so quickly. It's just like, holy cow.
Yeah.
It's amazing. A couple more questions before I let you go. One of them is, what gigs, like either as a performer or audience member, or maybe one or both, is like made a big impression on you?
Sure. So as a performer, so I would say probably like the first open mic that I ever played was like a huge step for me, just because I had been writing for so long and recording for so long. And it was really just all for myself, kind of, because I didn't really want to share it with, well, I shouldn't word it like that. I wanted to share it with people, but there's always just that kind of nagging, like, am I actually any good? And then also with like lyrics, I mean, a lot of the stuff I write, not all of it, but a lot of it is very personal. So then, you know, you're kind of, it's cliche, but sort of like letting people read your journal sometimes is how it can feel. So, and it's kind of like, well, if people hear me singing this, what are they going to think about me? And, but that gig, that open mic, was good enough where like a lot of people were telling me they loved my music, and I connected with a lot of other artists. And so it really gave me the confidence to really pursue more live opportunities and kind of have more of a social media presence. I didn't really have any social media presence before that, because I just was like just anxious about it, you know?
Yeah.
Like, what if this person I know finds me on here and they're like, oh my gosh, this is terrible. What a loser. And stuff like that, you know? So that kind of, you know, even though it was just I don't want to say just an open mic, but even though it was an open mic and not like a, just a regular paying gig or anything like that, it really was life changing for me more than any other gig that I've played.
Yeah, it's like it's getting over that imposter syndrome, as they call it.
Yeah, exactly. And I still haven't completely gotten over it, but at least it was kind of a step on the road to getting over it, I guess. But like with other, as an audience member, oh gosh, there's so many. But if I had to pick one, and it's kind of late in the game, but you know, after I've kind of, I don't want to say established myself as an artist, but after I've played a lot as an artist and kind of developed as an artist, but my wife and I went and saw The Cure in Chicago this summer, and it was pretty incredible. So that kind of, it was, I guess, the way it would have been impactful for me. Well, just seeing, you know, one of my favorite artists live of all time was amazing. And then also it just kind of kicked me in the butt a little bit in terms of I'd gotten a little bit lazy maybe with working on new music and things like that. Like, it's easy to, at the end of the night, just feel like, oh, I'm too tired to do this. And so like seeing them live really made me want to, you know, first of all, because I had this album, We Were Beautiful, in August. I'd had it basically completed, but was kind of dragging my feet on getting it out there. And so seeing them live, hearing them play these new songs, which they haven't released yet, and knowing how they are, they might never release them.
Yeah.
but it just kind of made me, it was just inspirational in terms of wanting to get my new music out there, wanting to do more in terms of getting, you know, promoting what I had, and which I'm working on doing now, and also just eventually getting more live gigs and everything.
Right. Wonderful. I mean, it's great to go and see somebody or a group that, you know, that you've loved for such a long time and still get inspiration from seeing them perform even new songs. It's a great feeling, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. As I wrap this up, is there anything that I haven't asked you that you want the listeners to know about?
Nope. I think you pretty much covered everything.
Okay. I try, you know, I want, you know, the guests and the listeners just to kind of feel comfortable and, you know, understand, you know, that we're just here to help, you know, everybody know what's going on in the Wisconsin music scene. And we really appreciate you having you on the show.
Yeah, thank you. I really appreciate you having me on.
The third song to play the podcast out, maybe pick the one that you think your wife would pick for this, because you said she's better at this than you are.
Sure. So there's the song on there called Who's Your Entertainment, which was the one that my wife picked as the first single. So yeah, we'll go with that to play every song.
Thank you.
Well, thanks again for tuning in to another episode of the Wisconsin Music Podcast. Once again, I'm Zach Fell, your host and creator of the Wisconsin Music Podcast, where I love to amplify the great sounds coming out of the Wisconsin state. We have great talent here, great support, great listeners. Thanks to Fox City's Indie Radio for syndicating this on Thursdays and Sundays, along with their other great programming. So make sure you check out the Fox City's Indie Radio. Thanks so much to this week's guest, Robbie from Elmer and the Ceramic Trees. Make sure you check out his music on Bandcamp and also live shows. You can check him out on Facebook. More details in the show notes. If you'd like to be on the show, just go to WisconsinMusicPodcast.com, fill out the guest request form up at the top, ask for your email and your name, and then I'll send you an auto email asking you for more information. If you are enjoying these episodes, please consider donating to the Wisconsin Music Podcast. Donations help pay for the website and putting the podcast up on streaming services, and also getting our name out there to all Wisconsinites and others that are interested in our great music here in Wisconsin. Donations are secured through PayPal and Stripe. All you have to do is go to the website and click on Donate to WMP. You can also head over to our Instagram and Facebook pages and like us there. Leave some comments. Also go to the podcast review section of your podcast player and leave a 5-star review. It would be great. You can also head over to YouTube and watch the interviews and leave comments there as well. Have a great week, everybody, and we'll see you next time.